All right.
We're on.
We are recording at this point, and this is Advancing Advocacy, and we've invited Ms. Sharon Denniston to be on the call and speak with us a bit more about being an effective advocate, a more effective advocate. We don't know who all is on the call, whether they're folks that are actually very experienced and right on down to some folks that may have never darkened the door of their legislative chambers. But this will hopefully give us all some good food for thought and ideas on how to move forward as advocates, particularly in the legislation. If I'm not mistaken, Sharon, is that right? You're focusing on your lawmakers.
That's correct.
And Sharon's come to us with a lot of good experience under her belt. She's been successfully able to not only block bad legislation, which all of us try to do if we're involved at all, but has actually gotten some legislation introduced, which is another whole level, because you generally have to find someone to introduce it and to help sponsor it through the whole process. So I'm certainly looking forward to learning from you today. And with that, I will yield the floor, and I will be watching the chat boards while Jennifer's manning the Q&A mode. At whatever point, Sharon, you want to pause and take questions, just let us know, and there's a process for taking Q&A as we go along too.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much to Brenda and Jennifer, and I actually want to correct Brenda in that she said that any of those of you who have not done any advocacy work with legislators, that you would darken their door, and I'm going to change that to brighten their door.
Oh, I like that. Sure.
Yeah, we'll look at it in a very positive way. I am talking today about becoming a more effective advocate, and I'll explain a little bit that originally I had said becoming an effective advocate. And again, like Brenda said, I realize that some of you come from a wide variety of advocacy backgrounds, so I really don't want to insult anybody by saying becoming an effective advocate, because some of you are probably doing a very good job. So I changed the title to becoming a more effective advocate, since all of us can learn from that. I see myself in a perpetual state of learning as I don't want to say how old I am, but I'm working on my doctorate degree at a late age in life, let's put it that way. So I truly believe in learning. So what I want to talk about today, I had a couple of different topics, and Jennifer picked some. And these really come from experience over the last 11 years where I've been brightening the door of legislators, I hope. and two of these things that Jennifer selected, you know, that come to mind and I think that people can learn from is that when we speak with legislators, number one, do we really know what we want? I think a lot of people think, oh, sure, yeah, I know what I want, but do you really know what you want? Is the first part of this presentation. And the second part is what kind of a mission are you on? I think probably most of us don't typically think of our visits with legislators as being a strategic mission. But I tend to think of it that way, and I think it's been helpful to me, and I'll share some of that with you. In part one, do you really know what you want? We want to understand the importance of focus and specificity and also thinking about the environment. When advocating for policy changes by legislators, and we're asking them for change. In part two, we're going to think about that mission that we're on and identifying the strategic purpose of each legislative visit and contact or phone call or whatever it is that we're doing with legislators. Now, I'm going to make some assumptions here, and they are that you've already articulated your problem. I mean, there's many things that obviously go into making you an effective advocate, and I'm just focusing on two specific things, so I'm assuming that you've already articulated your problem and that now you need to talk about what it is that you want. Oops, sorry. Ah! How do I go backwards? Determining what you want really requires focus. And focus, when you look that up in the variety of dictionaries, Google and Merriam-Webster, focus is the state or quality of having or producing clear visual definition. That's one of the statements from Google. And Merriam-Webster says, to adjust something such as a lens or a camera to make an image clear. So when we talk to legislators, we want to be focused on something specific so that we can make it clearer for legislators, so they can wrap their arms around what exactly it is that we want. When you think about focus, you really should be thinking about, you know, you need to know your priorities and use them to guide what it is that you want to, what you want from them. It's not unusual for people to meet with legislators and never ever get to the point of what it is that they actually want. They might have 20 or 30 minutes, you know, of time with the legislator, and they use it all up talking about the problem or how they are impacted. And while the problem is very important, it's also important to eventually transition the conversation toward a solution. Unless, of course, your goal is only to discuss the problem, which I don't think that's the case. We really want to move from a problem to a solution. Understandably, impacts can be very emotional. Impacts from laws like sex offender registration, especially, can be very emotional. And, you know, affecting both individuals that are directly and indirectly impacted by them, making it easy to consume the conversation with these kinds of discussions and preventing you from ever getting to what it is that you want. The kind of change that you want is the one that makes a difference for you and is one that can convince, that you can convince legislators that they want. Not too long ago, a young man named Tim was thoroughly disgusted with the registration laws, and he really was very down, and I was trying to help him feel empowered to try to do something about his situation. And so I arranged an appointment with his legislator, and he was going to go with me to that appointment. But before we went, I wanted to meet with him to talk to him about what he might expect in terms of the kinds of questions that the legislator might ask him. We talked, you know, for probably 15 or 20 minutes about that. This is a couple days before the appointment. And when I asked him, what was it that he wanted? Well, he said, well, I want to come off the registry. And it's like, well, yes, okay. Can you be more specific? And I said, you mean like maybe be able to petition, you know, in 5 years or 10 years, and something like that? And he got angry. He got angry because he said to me, I might be dead by then. Because he had been having issues with depression and all that, which I can fully understand. But yet, I said, well, then how would you go about just automatically being removed from the registry? Are you going to ask the legislator to do exactly that? And so what I want to point out in this slide here is that up there in the clouds, and what we really want is individuals really want to come off the registry, or in general, people need to come off the registry. We all can articulate that probably wonderfully. But however, you know, this next picture here with the sun there, and I don't know why it's blue. I'm not sure. It was just the clip art that I had. I would have rather had a bright yellow sun. But anyway, getting down and shedding some light on it, we might say something more like those at low risk should come off the registry. So we're giving a little bit more direction to it. And down there on earth, you know, in the grass, on the ground, we might be more specific and say, allow registrants the opportunity to petition the court for removal after 10 years. Now, this all sounds very simple, but sometimes when individuals go to legislators, they really don't begin to focus what they want in a direction that gives specificity to it. focus needs to have specificity. I've always loved that word ever since I was little. It just seems to kind of be a neat word to say. But specificity is to cause something to be directed at something specific. That's simple enough. So it really just means being specific. So when we're being specific, we've already defined the problem. You've chosen what you want to focus on, and you can state what you want in general terms, like Tim did. But now you need to be more specific about what it is that you want and how you might achieve that. Being specific, we need to be specific, but we need to be simple. Some say that's impossible, and it sounds like an oxymoron, but it's not. As Steve Jobs said, simple can be harder than complex. You have to work hard to get your thinking clean to make it simple. And so I think basically what I'm saying when I'm talking about the need to have focus is really kind of the need to get your thinking clean so that it's clear in your mind, so that it's easier for you then to articulate to legislators. Now here's just one example, of specificity. I kind of alluded to it a couple slides back here, but we might say allow adult registrants' ability to petition for removal from the SOAR after 10 years if they've had no subsequent registrable offense and they are at low risk for sexual reoffending. And you can get into more detail about what type of sexual risk assessments and all those kinds of things. And this may not be the change you really want, because after all, Tim just wanted to come off the registry. But it is nonetheless a change that you do want, and possibly one that you can get legislators to want and to agree with a lot of work. The other thing is when you talk about what you want, legislators need to know how to go about getting that. So in talking about how, provide an example of how a change might occur legislatively, a bill draft. Now that's not something that just anybody can do. But, and I'll explain a little bit later on, but a picture of legislation is worth 1,000 words to a legislator. They hear what you're saying, they hear what the problem is, they hear what you want, they hear you become more specific about what you want, but they have a hard time envisioning that in the actual legislative text. And if you have somebody in your group or somebody that you work with that is, either a public policy person who's got or has experience, with advocacy work with legislators or is a lawyer, you might enlist them to help you draft potential legislation that provides a clear example of what it is that you actually want. Legislators see textual changes. When I say textual changes, I mean written changes to laws, especially SOAR laws, as difficult and messy and hard to write, because after all, these are pretty difficult and messy laws. But by providing a draft, you simplify the issue for them. You answer a lot of questions regarding how this change may impact another part of the law, if you do a thorough job of that. You save his time and the time of his resources, his legislative director, his lawyers that he has for support, other legislative support staff. You save their time, and you've articulated exactly what you want, so it's not subject to misinterpretation when being translated, to office staff, aides and, the legislative directors and the individuals that I mentioned, who then translate it on to usually the legislative policymaking office, who translate it to their lawyers, or staff. And I think I became involved in writing bill drafts. Number one, I had a lot of legislators who, when you were done talking with them, they said, "Do you have a bill?" And they really weren't afraid to have someone from the public provide them with a bill draft. It wasn't like that was something that was special just for their legislative lawyers to do. They were open to what it was that that someone from the public or someone from an advocacy group might give them. In fact, I have found I've been most successful when I've done that, because what is being articulated sounds so complex, but when you do that and they actually see, wow, this just requires one change to one section, and it begins to look simpler to them. It begins to look something that could be doable, that it's not something that takes massive changes that are interwoven all over the place. And so that's been really effective for us. I've also found that right now I actually have 3 bills drafted, 2 of which have sponsors, and another 4th one that will probably be sponsored as well. But it tends to, once you have that support of a legislator for that bill, it gets through the process, the initial process, faster, because this is one that's clean and ready to go. And it's not requiring a whole lot of changes. And I've actually drafted bills that went to our Legislative Service Bureau, who's the one who reviews the drafts, and actually came back without any changes, which I always feel good about, let's put it that way. Because that's where sometimes things get bogged down, too. If you do get them to have interest in a bill, even if they haven't sponsored it yet, at least if they go get it drafted, that's a move in the right direction. My draft then gets converted to their actual legislative draft. So you're that much closer to the process. And when you have a lawyer that's looking through those drafts that he's got to write up that week, man, he probably wants to take the one that looks like it's ready to go. And takes that one perhaps over another one that's going to require a whole lot more work, you know, on his part. In drafting legislative changes and doing it well, you save the legislator time, as I mentioned, and you save the time of his resources, you know, who are in all likelihood already strained, and you've articulated exactly what you want. So, as I mentioned, not subject to interpretation at that point. My talking kind of got ahead of my slide there. So, in conclusion, in talking about, in understanding if you really know what you want, the question is really meant to make you think about what it is that you want in light of legislative changes and in light of what you can get the legislature to do. It's saying, do you really know what you want? Not, do you know what you really want? Because what you really want is what Tim said. He wants to come off the registry. And so we really need to understand what it is that we want in light of, you know, again, the environment and what we can get legislators to understand is something that they might want. We want to focus, you know, on what you want after evaluating your priorities and considering the environment. We want to articulate it clearly and specifically and provide a specific bill draft that shows how what you want might be achieved. Now, if you want, we can have questions at this point before we get into part 2. That might give me a chance to take a drink of water.
I have a question, Sharon.
Uh-huh.
I'm just kind of interested in, not that I've ever done it or have the capacity to do it, like drafting a bill. Is there, it's probably far beyond my ability to even know, but I don't even, you know, have enough information where I would even know where to begin. Is there a website or some place you can get information just to read about, just so I would, if I went to somebody and said, you know, would you help me write up this bill, that I know the kinds of questions to ask and the things to do?
I'm not familiar with any particular website. That, what you're asking, could be a presentation in and of itself.
Yeah.
My background is I'm a systems analyst. I was a systems analyst for many years. And so I dealt with a lot of technical things that I wasn't afraid to look at. So for me, I never was afraid to look at laws. and I wasn't intimidated by them. And then, you know, my doctoral work has actually helped me too in that regard. But I wouldn't say that you have to have that kind of background necessarily. It's really a more of a mindset. I think a lot of people would be afraid. But if you can enlist someone in your group, you know, if you have just one person in your group, I tend to be the one in our group, even over the lawyers even have me usually write it. If someone has that mindset, you know, employ their use to look at the law that you're talking about and specifically wanting to change. And I always try to change the law as least possible to get what it is that I want, so it can show legislators how something might be quite simple to achieve without major drastic, you know, overhauls. And even though we, you know, we would love to have major overhauls, but to move then, you know, in that direction that's closer to what it is that we'd like to see, you know, in this sort of legislation. So they don't have to be major changes. And I guess a lot of it just has to do with your comfort level, you know, with wanting to look at it and to be thorough. I always try to use the same kind of terminology that they already use so that it's familiar to them. But that's a whole lesson, really, in of itself, to talk about that.
Maybe are you all hearing me now? Okay, good. I once again muted myself and forgot which way I was muted. I wanted to say if anybody else has a question at this point, you would press star 6, and that puts you in the queue, and Jennifer can let people through. One thing I would add to what Sharon said, Jennifer, just from my experience, is that if you find some other bill, just to kind of see how they lay them out. I do agree that the most important thing is to get the piece of law that you want to change and then just literally do a markup on it. You know, say, I want to take these lines out, put these lines in, and just like you would edit any other document. And I mean, that's a start. And you wouldn't have to have it laid out perfectly the way they get introduced, because they do have people on staff that do that. So, you know, so that's just my little tidbit.
And that is literally what I do, is I literally take a copy and paste, you know, of the existing law, and then I'll go out there and I'll strike, you know, code that I want struck, and I'll add code, and I'll, you know, highlight that in red, and give them, you know, might even be a page, like this, the three that I have. The three drafts that are already out there right now, and two of them are sponsored. The second one, I call them A, B, and C, but B bill, that actually has three parts to it. That one was a little more complicated because I needed to look at two other parts of other laws that related to it, and that actually has to do with removing individuals from our registry if they don't have a criminal record, either because of a program we have in Michigan or because they had their record set aside. But that had three parts to it. But then C was a simple one. That was just a couple of lines in a piece of statute. And like I said, the discussion sometimes is so great, and it needs to be, because legislators need to understand the impact. But sometimes it's hard for them to get their hands around the textual aspect of it. When you show it to them in a bill, they're like, oh, that's all? You know, that's it? They're not quite as afraid. You know, then they can focus their energy on the other issues that might relate to getting that legislation through, and not focusing their energy on how do I write this, and oh, is this going to be hard to write, and do I have staff that has the time to write it? So it kind of gets you, it helps you leapfrog through that process, I think, a little bit faster. I had, like I said, I had many legislators who would say at the end of the visit, do you have a bill, do you have a bill? I had other people who were legislative directors for organizations, and one of them actually mocked me and said, you know, you don't write bills for legislators. And, you know, I had witnesses with me that had heard other legislators say many times, and I work with a judge, he's now retired, you know, who he also likes to write bills. So we just kind of ignored it and kept writing it, and we just kept
getting
fighting.
Yeah, I mean, geez, I would agree with that, Sharon. If you're just a citizen, you know, you're not a lawmaker, you're not a lawyer, so they're not going to expect it to be perfect. But if you go in there, maybe have a little preamble, as they might call it, where you, those bullet points that we're always telling you to go in with, you know, hey, here's the key points, here's the reason for the change, here's why it'll be beneficial to you, and here's the change. And you provide that to them. They take the parts that they, assuming they say yes, they take the parts that they want, they hand it off to their bill drafters, and they say, here, make it pretty. And then they hopefully bring it back to you so you can, you know, say, oh, yeah, that's what I meant, or, oh, my gosh, what did you do to my bill? And then you fix it. I've had both of those happen, so.
Yeah, I've been pretty lucky in that regard, but you're right, because they really do respect the person who wrote the bill. Mm-hmm. And they go back to you and they'll ask you, you know, is this how you wanted it? Is this right? Is this correct? And, you know, fortunately, I haven't had too much of that going back and forth. But I also agree with you, too. I always do, we always do a summary page. And on that summary page, it's kind of like layman's terms of what it is that we want, why it is that we want it. And we usually also indicate what some of the counter arguments will be and what the defense is to those counter arguments. And we try to do that all in one page.
Yeah.
And that way they've got their simple description there. If they don't want to pass around the bills and get people's opinions, they can pass around a little summary. And we've given them a couple of tools that way.
Yeah. So, Jennifer, do we have any other questions? I'm not sure if I'm seeing any or not.
I haven't seen any.
Okay. Just, again, it's star 6 if we have any questions. If not, you can certainly file them away and tackle them in the next round.
Okay, and then so I'm going to talk about part 2. Part 2 is, what kind of mission are you on? And again, as I, the other slide, you know, earlier said, you know, we're going to identify the strategic purpose of each legislative visit or contact. At least you should, anyway. I don't know if anybody else ever thinks of their legislative visits as a mission, specifically a strategic mission. I know I do, and, you know, strategic in terms of who I visit, what I know about who I'm visiting, and knowing my specific mission or purpose that I want to accomplish in that visit. And that all has to do with being specific again. There's that word. A mission is a pre-established and often self-imposed objective or purpose. It's a specific task with which a person or a group is charged. So think in terms of your mission, your purpose, your task that you want to accomplish, and be specific and strategic in that it's a carefully designed or planned, you know, it's carefully designed and planned to serve a particular purpose or advantage. It's not just, oh, I got an appointment with so-and-so, and yes, we're going to go and we're going to talk about, you know, this problem. It has to be more than that so that you can maximize your time, you know, with that particular legislator. Now, I tend to think of things, it's kind of funny, in 4 types of missions. And it's funny because I frequently, my visits are with an adult judge and with a juvenile probation officer. They're like my comrades here where we just, you know, beat doors down and try to bring light to these issues. And it's funny because I'll say to them, I'm usually the one who plans, gets all the appointments and schedules it all and everything and prepares all the documents that we take when we go and all the bill drafts and all that. And I'll say to them, okay, this is an educational mission. And sometimes they'll even say to me, okay, now what kind of mission is this? And because they're very supportive, and I'll say, oh, this is a fortifying mission. So I tend to think of it as 4 different types of missions. And I'm sure that there are other types of missions as well, but these are the main 4 categories that I tend to think of. An educational mission, a bolstering mission, a fortifying mission, which is similar, and a derailing mission. And I heard Scott talk about earlier how he was, you know, fighting legislation, and that sounds to me like those are derailing missions. an educational mission, that's one in which there are strategic legislators that we visit, and eventually we might visit, you know, a lot of others, but we pick certain strategic legislators. We pick legislators that are on the Judiciary Committee or on the Criminal Justice Committee, that are leaders, that might be on the Family Committee. They might be people that we know are teachers or social workers or people like that that we think might have a listening voice towards our concerns. Obviously, anybody that we've heard took an interest in this, you know, things that we've seen in the media where they've maybe actually said some things that were supportive. So we pick strategic legislators, and many of them are at square one. They know nothing about, you know, the topic, you know, that we're wanting to address. And usually these educational missions are a slow, repetitive, ongoing process. They never end, and there's always somebody else new that needs to be educated. But we educate them about the problem, and we point out the significance to them and to our state, or if they're a federal legislator, to the nation. They seem to be particularly concerned about that, of how you can say this problem relates to our state, you know, or our nation. We also, too, as part of educating, try to introduce them to alternatives, because sometimes, I mean, actually many times, people tend to not be real creative about these kinds of issues of sexual abuse. And so, therefore, they think there's only one answer, and that answer is to be punitive, throw them in jail, and have a registry. And they tend to be limited in their problem-solving skills, in a sense, in terms of possible alternatives. And so we try to introduce them to some of those kinds of things, too, to kind of broaden their thinking. And in doing this, one of the things that we're really trying to do is we're really trying to eliminate that shock effect so that we open dialogue. So even if they're not supportive, we've kind of gotten past that shock effect so that if a bill gets introduced, they might be more apt to listen to more before they make their decision, but it's not just automatically jump on the bandwagon to fight against it. And you know, we also work with the Attorney General's Office and our Prosecuting Attorneys Association too. We're working with them very closely right now because we want to help them understand these issues and possible solutions so that when bills are introduced, they're not going to be surprised by them. We've shared them directly with them what it is that we want to do. The next type of mission is what I call a bolstering mission. Bolstering is to make stronger or better, to give support to. And a bolstering mission is when we're visiting either a bill sponsor or someone who's a hopeful bill sponsor, we want to kind of build them up so that they become stronger in terms of their beliefs about why this law needs to change. And that helps to keep that dialogue going. It gives momentum to our issues. And we can find out from them, you know, if they've been discussing it with other people, we can learn from them. What issues that maybe have come up or been voiced by other legislators so that we can address those early on to kind of counter issues that might be things that might weaken their resolve to sponsor legislation. At the same time, too, we can provide resources. I work with a wonderful group of professionals that cover everything from the faith-based community to treatment providers to judges, lawyers, criminologists, professors, you name it. And so we can put together a pretty good group that could help insulate them in terms of when they introduce legislation that can actually speak and are willing to speak publicly, you know, to the media if there were issues that arose. And fortunately, the last couple of pieces of legislation that I've been a part of, the things that we were prepared to support in the media never blew up in the media. So we just quietly stayed back since there weren't any issues with that. And we tend to take somewhat of that approach. You know, if there's not a problem, we don't want to create one, the public wasn't complaining about the issues of taking 2,400 juveniles off of our registry, so we weren't going to magnify it any, let's put it that way. But anyway, so this also fosters, you know, the resolve of the legislator to keep going. So I tend to think of bolstering as referring to that person who's going to be a sponsor or a potential sponsor. Then I have what I call fortifying missions. That's to protect or strengthen against attack, surround or provide with defensive military works. Well, I think of fortifying missions as ones where I'm working with other legislators to provide support to the sponsor, to maybe be co-sponsors, to if maybe remain neutral so they're not going to fight it, or to just out and out, you know, provide support. And basically, what I'm doing is we're visiting these other legislators, you know, who might have some interest, who might be on committees, especially committee members. We're going to provide support when this goes through a committee. Legislators in key roles, and again, having to educate them. You know, as I mentioned there, again, eliminating the shock effect, you know, and opening the dialogue with other people, garnering the support. And basically, I love this last line, we want to build a new bandwagon. That's what we're trying to do. And, you know, we all know what the old bandwagon looks like, right? But this is building a new bandwagon. Let's not get on that old bandwagon. Let's get on a different bandwagon, a bandwagon that might have to do with saving money, a bandwagon that might help to do with helping people be employed, helping people find housing, a bandwagon that's, you know, taking less resources from the state and less money from the state, a bandwagon that says, hey, you know, let's look at their risk. You know, those are all new bandwagons. So that's what we try to do with a fortifying mission, is fortify those people around the legislator that's going to be the bill sponsor. And then the last mission type is a derailing. I meant to say a derailing mission. And it seems like in past legislative sessions, two legislative sessions ago, we spent a lot of time dealing with derailing missions. This was leading up to our Adam Walsh Act legislation that was introduced. I have to tell you that probably one of the most significant pieces of legislation that we're proud of having derailed was literally in 2010, when the Adam Walsh Act legislation was introduced in our Senate Judiciary, and they wanted to get it through before the end of the legislative session. There were a number of us professionals that testified at that hearing, and the legislators on the committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, said, we've never heard this before. We didn't know this. We hadn't heard this. And because we were fighting fires all the time, and they literally didn't vote it out of committee. And we were shocked. For a piece of legislation that was that huge and significant, we were shocked. And we almost like didn't know what to do, because we'd shot down a few smaller things, but wow, that one was huge. And so what happened is it laid over to the next legislative term, and in the next legislative term they still fought very hard to push it through and everything, but they knew now that they had some people that they were going to be up against in terms of the concerns that were being expressed, you know, in intelligent ways, and that were worthy of being given attention. So that was an example of one of our derailing missions. We derailed legislation too that had to do with sports and school bus stops and some of those kinds of things. They always frustrate us, because when those come up, they end up sucking a lot of our time, and we would really rather spend it on doing those educational, bolstering, and fortifying missions so that we can move forward and have some positive legislative changes. So, I got ahead of myself again, but, you know, really derailing is having to play defense. And as Scott knows, you know, it's no fun playing defense. You don't really feel all that productive. But it's significant to actually defeat some, you know, bills, you know, that are not good. You know, it certainly is very worthwhile, let's put it that way, but it takes a lot of time and energy. And, you know, we've done this in ways where where it's not either we can, several times what we've done most effectively is actually is prevented it from getting taken up in the committees that it was assigned to. So it never got taken up. That's the easiest actually to do. We got the school bus stop one, you know, to not go anywhere, where we were able to talk with the bill sponsor and get him to not push his bill. So that was great. So anyway, in conclusion, with regards to your mission, you know, have an objective or purpose for every single visit. You know, carefully design and plan your visit to meet your objective and educate, bolster, fortify, and sometimes even derail legislation. And lastly, I know that this isn't, you know, all the things that there is to know about advocacy. I just hope it kind of helps to get people's minds thinking and being a little bit maybe more organized about what you do when you speak to legislators. But I want to leave you with this quote, because in dealing with, you know, almost any justice-type policy, it takes a lot of effort and courage. And as John F. Kennedy said, efforts and courage are not enough without purpose and direction. So hopefully this will help you channel your purpose and your direction. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sharon. And again, I'm checking to make sure you can hear me.
I can.
Yay! Okay. And I do have a couple of questions. And again, if other folks have questions that have called in either with their phones or with their computers, I do believe it is *6. If you're using your computer, there's actually a little dial pad on your app that you can use to press your *6 with. And so if anybody has questions, do hop on in. I did get a couple via the message board, by the chat board. Stefan wanted to know if we can get a copy of your slides.
Oh, yeah. I plan on giving it to Jennifer, so she's going to
Great.
Post them.
Okay. And then the other, I didn't think you'd have a problem with that. And the other one was, if you had any recommendations about how to form a group of people who would be visiting a lawmaker, like, do you have any suggestions about how many would go?
Do you
have any specific titles about? I know in my own instance, I mean, sometimes people feel better if there's just one of them going, but you know, roles that they should play if you do go in groups, that kind of thing.
Yes, I think that's very important, actually, and sometimes our mix shifts, although I'm always a part of it, but sometimes I'm there because I have the history about the laws. Interestingly enough, sometimes the professionals that go, they're more than willing to speak to, you know, the issues of, especially with registration, but they don't know a whole lot about the past, you know, legislative sessions and the history and the laws and all that, and they like to defer to me. So sometimes it's good to have a person in that group that's knowledgeable about both your state's history, if you can, and the federal history and all that. Legislators tend to like that because they tend to be focused on what the intent of a law was and why it was passed and what brought it to come to play. So that's usually not, though, believe it or not, that's not usually your judge-type person, your probation officer, your treatment provider. Those people can't really speak to that. So it's good to have someone mm-hmm. like that. And if you're talking about juvenile issues, then things like a juvenile probation officer, treatment provider, juvenile court judge, those would all be good. I've even had a juvenile prosecutor that has been included in some of our meetings when we were dealing with some of our tougher legislators. The chair of our judiciary committees, if they give us, you know, if they're going to be someone that we think might be difficult to get to understand, we've included a juvenile prosecutor. But group size, I've been in meetings that, and sometimes keep in mind, legislators might add on, they'll have themselves and possibly one or two other persons. I've had it where there's just the legislator. I've had it where there's a legislator, maybe a legislative director, and perhaps a legislative director and one other person. It's not that often that we meet with a legislator and another legislator at the same time, although I had a meeting like that just last Friday. It's not that often that we have joint meetings. When we do have joint meetings, typically you wouldn't want more than two legislators there. You just have too many ideas going on at once. But in thinking about that, okay, if they've got one or two people there at the table, then usually we try not to exceed three or four, and sometimes that can get to be a lot also. It's nice when there's maybe two or three of us, and then we've got the legislator or the legislator's aide. Usually their tables, you know, their conference tables will handle about six people pretty nicely. So usually, and their aides usually don't say a whole lot. They're just taking notes. You know, they're gathering the papers and taking notes.
Correct.
So they're usually not involved in the dialogue. So in the dialogue are going to be the three people that are there maybe speaking and then the legislator. So four people might be involved in the dialogue. And we yield to, you know, we yield to whoever it is, you know, if the judge can speak to the fact that he's had someone come before him seven times for failure to register, is at no greater risk, but, you know, he's had to deal with somebody, you know, seven times for that, you know, he's a great person to speak about that and the difficulties with that.
So it sounds like it would help to, you know, if you are planning a meeting with someone, to try to bring in somebody that has some professional knowledge in that background, having somebody that is good with the history and the laws of those particular laws also. I know in my own experience, we don't often, we're less organized than you here in Maryland, believe it or not, that we often only have a couple of us, and so oftentimes what we're doing mainly is making sure we're clear on maybe who's doing the primary talking and then who would do the backup talking so that we don't, you know, or to just plan carefully what the message is. So like in your case, you'd say, okay, if they're going to talk about such and so, that's going to be your area, you know, and kind of have some of that lined out ahead of time, who's going to answer which questions. I assume that's important, the more people you have to have that planned out. Would that be accurate?
It is. And typically in our group, you know, with me being the public policy background person, mm-hmm. I'm usually the one who, right now, a lot of our meetings are talking about our three specific bills. Mm-hmm. And so these bills are totally new to legislators. They haven't seen them because we have sponsors for two of them, but they haven't been introduced officially yet. So I am the one, for instance, in our group that would talk about just what these bills are going to do. And then the judge and the probation officer, juvenile probation officer, then they interject, in a sense, what the significance is in terms of reality, you know, to kids or to, you know, to adults. I also have some of that background, too. As a juvenile advocate, I deal with kids who are faced with registration every single day. But I tend to yield to them because, you know, they've got the title of, you know, 32-year juvenile probation officer, you know, and so they can speak to that. But they're usually fine, though, with, you know, in my case, I wear the hat of the person who has the history, who knows, you know, how things evolved and all that, and then also what our legislation is that we're proposing. And then that's where they kind of, you know, address, you know, specific areas, or when the legislator has questions. You know, fortunately, between the three of us, you know, there's somebody that can typically answer it. And if we can't, we're honest with them that we can't answer it, but that we'll look it up and we'll provide them with an answer.
Yeah. Okay. If as is often the case in many of our groups, there may only be one or two. Like I say, in my case, I don't often have the experts to come in. What would you say if there's just the one or two of us, the most important thing is to have under your belt? You know, if it was just me going in and I wanted to kind of maximize what the value of the time, what would be the most important things for me to know?
Number one, you need to know what level of understanding that particular legislator might have at this point in time. Because, you know, for instance, last Friday we met with a defense attorney, a legislator that is a defense attorney. And so our conversation can start at a different point than what it would start, you know, at with regards to someone who's an accountant, who we also met with last Friday. And knowing what they're, if they have any interest in juvenile justice or the justice system, because that helps you know, again, how you need to focus your conversation and at what level you need to, and it might save you, you know, a lot of time talking about things that you don't need to go into as much detail on. So
okay,
I don't know if that, I don't know if that helps you, you know, at all.
Sure.
It's most legislators, I can tell you this, know very little. And even defense attorneys often know very little because they might not deal with a whole lot of, you know, of the kind of legislation that you're talking about. And that's probably the hardest part, is to make sure that you start simple in terms of explaining, you know, what the issues are. And, you know, everybody knows, okay, you know, especially the subject of registration is one that's, you know, controversial and all that in their mind's eye, and one that they think is difficult. And you kind of have to take a lot of that out of it. You know, like I said, to start to build a different, start to create that new bandwagon, and to get away from that. And so I guess that's what I think, you know, the goal really is to kind of demystify this topic and to speak in terms of facts and to provide resources to them, so that if you haven't said everything you want to say at the meeting, you know, you can always follow up, you know, with that and make yourself available and make other resources available to them. And on that subject, I want to talk about, you know, some of the professionals that are involved in what I have found from my experience is, and I work with a lot of professionals that work in juvenile justice and in the adult justice system and or in treatment and all that, that they're very busy people, but they're more willing to help than you think. And so if you have a specific and you're organized about your visit, that many times these professionals are more willing to go to these meetings than you would think. You just coordinate it around their schedule. You know, you make sure that you're very clear about, you know, what it is we're going to discuss and what our mission is and what it is that you hope that they can, you know, provide in that conversation. And they're more than, I found that they're more than willing to do that. I found that there's a lot more people than people think that are actually willing to be a part of something like that.
Absolutely. We have Jennifer. First, let me just check. Are we getting anybody pressing *6? Do we have a question?
I don't see any.
We're all just, everybody's just awfully quiet. I'm so surprised at the lack of people asking questions that way. I actually went to make sure I was giving out the right code. We have had one person who's on here who's from Michigan and wants to connect with you, Sharon. So maybe one thing you could do is either, you know, share whatever contact info you're comfortable with us, and also maybe tell the name of your organization, if you've got a website, something like that, that anybody who's interested could go to connect with you that way.
Sure. And I frequently speak at the ARSOL meeting that, you know, Francie Baldino, that she holds.
Okay.
And, I mean, she invites me to speak and keep, you know, that particular group apprised of what's going on in Lansing.
Where can people find out about that if they're from your state or from nearby?
I mean, ARSOL has a website for Michigan. They do have a website. And I'm also involved in a group called the Coalition for a Useful Registry. Mm-hmm. And that group's in transition of creating their website. I was the founder of their professional advisory board. And typically, like, my legislative work is all with the professionals that are from that group. There's a number of us that like to visit legislators. The professional advisory board will be putting on an educational session for legislators. Usually every legislative term will put on one to talk about the registry. Again, to demystify it and to talk, we want to talk with legislators before they begin hearing all the, you know, the media type stuff, you know, that kind of, what's the word, you know, that functions based on myths and things like that. You know, we try to mm-hmm. educate them before that happens. But, so, I mean, probably through the ARSL website, you can, you know, find the Michigan ARSL.
Not necessarily, because we're only showing we're not showing everything. So if you happen to know the name of the group and could go ahead and share that.
I can't remember what she called.
I'm trying
her.
To pull it up real quick.
I'll see if I can find it.
Yeah, I mean I can get it, but it would, but we're not showing groups that aren't incorporated. Or otherwise, you know, of certain size, and we certainly are not showing where or when they meet. You'd have to connect directly with them for that.
I'll see if I can find that.
Okay,
in the meantime.
I do see Michigan is still on there. Michigan Citizens for Justice.
That's the name. Yeah, I knew she had a name for that group. Yep.
And it's micitizensforjustice.com. I'll see if I can copy and paste it onto the chat board.
We have a couple questions.
Okay, great. Go ahead and
Susan Cook. I'm trying to unmute you. Okay, Susan, I have you unmuted if you'd like to ask your question.
Yes, you're talking about the legislation. Who is it that you actually contact?
I actually contact, when scheduling an appointment with legislators, is that what you're wondering?
Right.
You know, I actually call their office in, you know, in our case it's in Lansing, and usually you'll end up speaking to someone who is a scheduler. I can give you a couple tips there. Pardon me?
And who? Well, I called, like, the representative, I called the senator, I called the governor, and actually I got the representative, I talked to them. The senator, kind of the guy, gave me the runaround, but then he said, well, maybe next year.
So I don't typically talk to them over the phone. I usually plan a meeting with them, and, you know, initially sometimes, I mean, now everybody knows who I am and who I go to visit them with, but initially, like, if you're somebody that is new to doing this,
mm-hmm.
I try to schedule, if I were you, I would try to schedule appointments that we call in-district. I don't know if that's a Michigan term or if that's used everywhere, but in-district means that your legislator is back in their own district. They're not in your capital working on legislation. And here in Michigan, they're in Lansing Tuesday through Thursday, but so on Monday and Friday, they're back in their district. And that's when they're more available, for instance, to their constituents. Or depending on, and I frequently speak with legislators who I'm not their constituent, but they have a leadership role as either being part of the judiciary, the criminal justice committee, or they're the chair of those committees, and so they will honor meeting with you even though you're not a constituent because of their role, that they are speaking in a sense, or they're sitting in this committee on behalf of all of Michigan. And so when you try to get an in-district appointment, usually you have more success at being able to get like a block of time that might be an hour of their time, which is nice. If you do it in your capital, you might be more inclined to get like 20 minutes. I mean, we've got an hour and 45 minutes before, an hour or 45 minutes or half an hour, sometimes only 15 minutes. But if you ask for an in-district appointment and you're not afraid to go travel to that district or whatever it is, you know, that is one of the best ways to actually meet with the legislator.
Okay, so yeah, I should ask for an in-district appointment.
Yes.
They usually ask me, well, what do I want to discuss?
Yeah.
And when I tell them, they say, well, I don't know if he wants to be doing this right now.
Yeah.
And they don't give me an appointment.
And I can you know, I can imagine that, and one of the ways that I would avoid that is mm-hmm. that is to say that you, and I don't know if you were to have a family member or someone like that that's impacted by this, and so it's very near and dear to you because of that, is sometimes you could say that you'd like to speak to them about a justice issue, and that you would much rather discuss it with them in person because this is of a very I don't want to say emotional.
Sensitive?
Sensitive, yes. A very sensitive subject, you know, that you'd like to speak to him in person about. And I know that legislators here will honor that. I know of legislators that they will still meet. They don't have to know the exact subject, you know, of what it is. And then that way you actually have them. And the benefit to that is that then they can see your sincerity and how you're impacted and a lot of other things about you that help to help them understand the issue better without shutting you down before they ever speak to you.
Right.
So that's the suggestion there. Now, when you're in the Capitol, they're much busier because they have committee meetings and they have lots of other meetings, other lobbyists and stuff that are there. It's, you know, harder, you know, you might have to aim for the lunch hour, you know, early in the day or late in the day or those kinds of things. If you're lucky and it's a legislator that spends the night, you know, because they have a long way to travel, then sometimes they'll give you something that's, you know, like a late afternoon because they know they're not going home that night anyway. If
right,
it's somebody
yeah.
that travels, yeah, if it's somebody that's traveling back home, then they're going to be cutting their day and wanting to get out of there at like 4:30 so they can get home to their family, you know, at 5:30 or 6 or something.
Right.
But that's the in-district appointments are ones where you really get the most time and attention. Also, too, about the in-district appointments is you're less likely to have them substitute with one of their aides being there. Because sometimes when you're at your Capitol and they've got an appointment plan and all of a sudden something comes up and instead their aide will meet with you. You know, and that's, you know, whereas in district, their aides are not in district. Their aides are in the Capitol city. You know, they live there, and so therefore you're more likely to get the actual legislator.
I see.
That's a very good point.
Well, thank
Definitely.
You. Yeah, no, I appreciate that.
We have another question from Dawn. Hold on, Dawn. I'm going to unmute you.
Dawn. I don't actually have a question. I had an answer when you all were looking for Michigan Citizens for Justice.
Oh.
I'm just a little slow.
No problem.
Yeah, we did get that. And remind us again the name of your organization, as long as Don's brought us back to that, of your group.
I actually am a part of the Professional Advisory Board to the Coalition for a Useful Registry, but the Coalition for a Useful Registry is the part of the group that, you know, addresses and assists like family members and friends and registrants and all that.
Mm-hmm.
They do not meet as often because we have a strong professional advisory board that meets with legislators, which is one of the missions of that professional advisory board is to speak on behalf of individuals that are impacted by the registry.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a wonderful thing. And so typically the coalition itself, they meet, you know, with the members that are impacted less frequently. Usually when there's some sort of law change or something that requires clarification or something that we need them to do in terms of legislation that might be moving and we want them to testify or write letters or visit their legislators and,
sure.
you know, we want to put a bigger push on that, then we'll meet. So that group, it's interesting because it might seem like they're not a very active group, but they really are active.
There's different ways to be active, yeah. Well, what's a way that that people could connect with that group? Is there an email? Is there
eventually there's Oh, geez, I got to think of the email. You caught me off guard on that one. But there, the website is going to be Coalition. It's called Coalition UR. What is it going to be? .org. And they're in the process of, you know, coming out with a website. They're, I'm not sure. It's supposed to launch pretty soon, like in the next like month or two. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Coalition UR. That stands for Useful Registry .org.
Okay. Okay.
That's the website. And then once that website comes out, there will actually be email links and all that. We do have a Coalition UR at yahoo.com.
Yeah, I figured there must be some way you guys are communicating right now. So.
Yeah, we've got a huge group. It is actually a very huge group, and it's by word of mouth.
Okay. Coalition UR at yahoo.com.
Somehow people find us. That's for sure. I can tell you that. Well, I mean, I don't know. They find me, you know, for a lot of advocacy issues and, you know, to assist them with things.
Okay.
I'm going to double check that. I wasn't expecting to get into all that, but that's okay.
Well, hey, you know, we're activist types, you know. We want to connect where we can. And I don't know how many Michigan folks we have on the call. I do know that there was, you know, at least the one person.
Brenda, I don't know, somebody mentioned ACK about getting the PowerPoint. Sharon's going to send that to me. Mm-hmm. And for those who may not know, that will be posted to the meeting wall, which you can get to even if we're not having a meeting. And when you go to the wall, you will see on the bottom right where we've uploaded documents or somebody's PowerPoint, something like that.
Sure. The other thing we will do, of course, we're recording this, and we've started posting that and documents where as appropriate up on the RSOL website. So you can also at least get to links for these. And get to those from our website as well. So.
Yeah, the email is coalitionur@yahoo.com.
Oh, okay. I have shared that on the chat for those who are checking. That is visible on the wall if you're not looking at the wall. Just for those who did want to, you know, reach out to you later with an extra question or connect with the group and I did share. It's Francie, right?
You know, Francie tends to have kind of a support group kind of approach.
Hers is a little more of a supportive focus, which is good. You need all sorts, right?
It is, right. Whereas ours is more of a legislative focus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to do everything. It's hard to be everything. So
it really is.
So it's good that you guys have the two different groups there to work and that you're working together. You know, that's the other, just kind of in your particular areas and sharing those strengths. So that's awesome.
And she's very good about anything that the coalition sends out and updates and all that, disseminating mm-hmm. that to those RSOL, those citizens for justice, is that what you called it? You know, she's good at fanning out that information. She passes it along.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Great. So, and I have one person that just posted on here saying thank you and that he's looking forward to seeing everybody in Dallas, which kind of is a nice little lead-in to just remind folks that our conference is coming up. And on June 25th, registration certainly wide open. We're coming on to the last month where you can get discounts. If you're a member, you can get discounts right up to the very last day. But if you're just looking for early bird discounts, that ends at the end of May. So you want to, you know, don't delay. If you're planning on going, go ahead and get yourself registered for that. And do hope to see many of you there, and we're also hoping maybe to have a live streaming option for people who are unable to attend, to be able to do that. We're still getting the kinks worked out on that, but crossing my fingers and hoping we can get that set up as an added plus. So, is there any other question that we want to ask of our guest this evening? And if not, I can also give
you my own email address. I mean, I can, I'll give you that for my, it's S. Denniston, D-E-N-N-I-S-T-O-N, at Illumin, I-L-L-U-M-I-N-E, R-A-C.com. The word Illumin, to provide light, see? Like, there you go. I'm a light person, right? Knocking on those doors and bring light.
S. Denniston, S-D-E-N-N-I-S-T-O-N, at IllumenRAC.com. I-L-L-U-M as in mother, I-N as in never, E-R-A-C.com. And
right.
I am, again, sharing that on the meeting wall, but that disappears after a little bit, so it's not up there forever, but I am sharing it on the meeting wall for right now.
Yeah, and the RAC represents research, analysis, and consulting, because I do a lot of research and analysis and consulting, I guess.
Yep, I know that for sure. Well, very good. I want to just say thank you again for you being on the call. It's been certainly very, very helpful, I think, whether we're new or old at this. And just want to thank also those who are on the call and look forward to seeing everyone in Dallas and seeing everyone again. We're not quite sure what's up for next month, so keep posted. We'll send out notices as we go along. There will not be one in June because it's just practically right on top of the conference itself. So good evening, one and all, and we'll stop the recording at this point and move